Blog Talk Radio.
We welcome you to Missing Pages of History, a program dedicated to the upliftment of underserved communities. We seek to be a voice for those communities. We seek to be a voice for those communities and peoples whose voices have been left out of the history books, and to correct this injustice by filling in those missing pages of history. Today we will make our contribution to Black History Month 2016 by addressing and sharing the following questions. How did capitalism begin and how was it built? And did you know President Barack Obama was not the first Black president? These will be our leading questions for discussion today, and we would like for you to join in and participate. This will be our agenda for today's program, and we invite you to listen in and call in at 818-337-0016, or you can go to our chat line and write in your questions or comments. Before we bring our guest, Emmanuel, who is a contributor, analyst, and a historian, I would like to make a couple announcements about Mr. Page's history or ongoing activities. On Saturday, February the 20th at 1 p.m. on WCLM, 1450 radio station, we will be hosting our first quarterly Ralph Jordan fundraisers for this year. And if you have not purchased your tickets yet, please do so by contacting one of our members, or you can go to our website. And our website is www.mphinc.org. And while you're on our website, don't forget we have a monthly T-shirt and cap fundraiser drive, where we are seeking your support to buy a cap and T-shirt and support Mrs. Page's history. Remember, we only are successful based upon the nature of your participation and support. We would like to have your report, and we thank you. In the future, Mrs. Page's history will be doing some programs around the issue of race, religion, and racism, as well as I'd like to just share with our listening audience that I have just recently came back from Cuba, and we also going to be doing a program on my trip and a program on Cuba in the near future. Those are some of the activities and programs that's going on. As always, we take all support and all contributions in terms of supporting our program activities by sending it to Missing Pages History, P.O. Box 27782, Richmond, Virginia, 23261. If you have any questions or comments as well, you can reach us by phone at 804-321-3217. This is our little house cleaning for this morning. As always, we'd like to thank you for your past and continuing support, and remind you that, remember, Missing Pages of History is a bi-weekly program. You can catch us every other Saturday at 1 p.m. as we continue to travel down the road of filling our Missing Pages of History. So at this point in time, we'd like to bring in our historian, Emmanuel. We'd like to welcome Emmanuel to Missing Pages of History. Welcome, Emmanuel.
Thank you.
You know, Emmanuel, one of the things we want to do right now is we want to just share a little bit history, fill in some of our missing pages on this whole question of the initiation of how this government got started, particularly in terms of what role Blacks or African people have played in terms of starting the formation of the United States government. And one of the things history has shown is that That was a man named John Henson, who was very respected and played a key role in the beginning formation of development of the U.S. government. And I would like for you, based upon your history of researching John Henson, could you tell the people what significant role he played toward this formation of the United States of America and who he was?
Yes. John Henson was a Moor. A Moor, basically, is what a Negro is called here in Europe. A Moor is a mulatto in Europe, basically. They don't call them Negroes. They call them Moor, M-O-O-R. He was the first president of the United States, not George Washington. He served from 1781-1782. But here is the significance. This country was formed on March 1st, 1781, with the adoption of the Articles of Confederation. This document was actually proposed on June 11th, 1776, but not agreed upon by Congress until November the 15th, 1777. And what happened was Maryland refused to sign this document until Virginia and New York ceded their western lands. And why Maryland did that, because they was afraid that these states could gain too much power in the new government from such a large amount of land. But once this signing took place in 1781, that's when John Hanson served from 1781 to 1782, needed a president to run the country. John Hanson was chosen unanimously by Congress, which included George Washington. Unanimously chosen by Congress. In fact, all the other potential candidates refused to run against him. He was a major player in the Revolution and extremely influential member of Congress. Now, further notes on him, things that he did was amazing. As president, Hanson ordered all foreign troops off American soil and also removal of all foreign flags. We're talking about the British, we're talking about the French. Get off the land, basically. Move out of the United States. And took all their flags down. He also established the Great Seal of the United States, used now on all official documents.
Okay, Emmanuel,
Thursday of every November to be Thanksgiving Day. Is that amazing? These are things this man did as a black president. But again, America was not going to accept a black president during the heart of enslavement period. Enters George Washington.
Now, can you repeat the last point, Emmanuel, something about his contribution to Thanksgiving? What was his relationship to Thanksgiving again?
He declared that the fourth Thursday of every November to be Thanksgiving Day. How many people know this? How history had distorted that. He declared that. And again, it's still true today.
Well, since we are on Black History Month, I'm just real curious in terms of your analysis of why you think this particular history was clearly omitted when it comes to the reality of the formation of this government, this country. What you think your analysis could be on that, Emmanuel, on this omission?
Well, the omission is, like I'll be doing later on, that, you know, our history largely remains white history. Black people as a race are virtually non-existent when historical events are described in textbooks, movies, and centennial celebrations. Their role in America is not as most often that of cotton pickers, marchers, riders. This is how they betray us. Black History Month narrowly limits contributions of blacks to your familiar list to 10 to 15 individuals, what they usually do, when in fact, blacks, even though they're enslaved and powerless, had a profound and indelible influence on the American social economic system. Black labor were the engine that drove this nation and civilization world. Slavery and its legacy shaped and continue to reveal this nation's culture, moral, and ethical hypocrisy. Well, the products of black labor created an industrial revolution in Britain and in America. They produced social tension that led to Revolutionary War, Civil War, Reconstruction, and National Civil Rights Movement. So much information about race remains lost or buried in laws, bills, or sales, newspaper reports, letters, economic analysis, personal diaries. But this is the reason why. Because, again, it's called his, draw a line from north to south, history. This invasive history will rectify this as much as possible. I told you before, and I tell you again, black people as a race are virtually non-existent when historical events are described in textbooks.
Emmanuel, you know, also, when we talk about slavery or the institution of slavery, they always limit to the physical aspects of keeping a group of people in environment. But they never really give you a real analysis of what was the motivation of its true role in terms of how it relates to our existence. So one of our lead questions today is, we'd like for you to talk about how, when we look at slavery, how did it begin and how did it play a role, particularly in terms of building capitalism in America?
Yeah, before I get into that, I want to just name the other six black presidents. We're talking about, basically, look it up yourself. We're talking about Thomas Jefferson. We're talking about Andrew Jackson. We're talking about Abraham Lincoln, Warren Harding, Calvin Coolidge, Dwight E. Eisenhower. Those were the presidents and Mr. John Hanson prior to Barack Obama. Your question was on capitalism. Slavery gave birth to capitalism.
But Emmanuel, can I ask you, you said something I never heard of. You said we had several other black presidents before Barack Obama. Hey, listen,
yes.
Those names. Can you repeat those names again and maybe give our people some... You said, look, I know you want our people to look up the information, but repeat the names again, because these names, from my memory, they all have labeled them totally as European people. Repeat those names again.
Thomas Jefferson. His mother was a half-breed Indian squaw, and his father was black. He was a mulatto. Half white, half black. From Virginia. Abraham Lincoln. Well, by the way, Thomas Jefferson, he fathered numerous children with Sally Hemings, a mulatto slave who he lived with in Europe. She actually lived in the White House. His wife was down the hall, but that was his wife's half-sister. Sally Hemings was his wife's half-sister. Abraham Lincoln. His mother was an Ethiopian, and his father was an African-American. Warren Harding. He was black. He never denied his ancestry. Our Republican leaders called on Hardin to deny Negro history, and he wouldn't do it. Calvin Coolidge, the 29th President of the United States, he was black. He proudly admitted that his mother was black, but he claimed it was mixed because of the mixed immigrant ancestry. His mother's maiden name was Moore, M-O-O-R. And I repeat to you again, in Europe, the name Moore was given to all black people, as in America, the name Negro was used when you were dark. Dwight Eisenhower, the 33rd President of the United States, he was black. His mother, Ida Elizabeth Stover Eisenhower, was an anti-war advocate, and she was half black.
Okay. Those are really, truly missing pages, because I had no idea that this particular historical information was available, and that was information in terms of really what makes up these individuals in terms of their biological makeup. And definitely, that's something to think about.
Well, through DNA, all of them have one, their ancestry is from 1/5 to 1/16 African American. That's 1927. Virginia legislature passed a law, if you're 1/16, one used to be 1/5, but to fine-tune it even more, they made it 1/16, 1927. Missed in the Nation law came. Every state had this law.
Okay, Emmanuel. Our centerpiece for this particular program, Part 1, as it relates to Black History Month, we'd like to talk about the whole question of how slavery gave birth to American capitalism. Could you guess, based on your research, how slavery played a role giving birth to American capitalism?
Well, the international commercialization of black slavery changed the world and economic and its economic concepts. The old European mercantilism was placed by capitalism. Mercantilism meant profiting from the sale of a product. Capitalism means profiting from another's labor. Distinguish the two. The factory, the word factory, was first introduced in the 15th century to describe Portuguese buildings that were used as holding places for slaves at ports along the West African coast. The franchising concept, what we have today, as popularity known, was introduced by the English Royal African Company in 1668 to establish a monopoly on the slave trading industry. Like modern day franchising chains, excuse me, but the modern day franchising claims for a 15% fee. The Royal African Company provided its franchise slave plantation with the following: owners with land, supplies, slaves, military protection, and a ready market for their raw slave-produced cash products. By the early 1800s, with the renewal interest in cotton production, plantations that had at least 100 slaves introduced a gang system of work, which we call now the assembly line. In the gang system, slaves were assigned work using an assembly line type process that revolutionized the use of slave labor, introduced mass production, and significantly increased productivity. Raw materials produced by slaves fueled both Europe's and America's industrial and banking revolution. That is the birth that gave birth to capitalism.
And how did the slaves become American capitalism, particularly?
Now we go to America. It got transferred here. Again, we need to read the Willie Lynch letter. That's number one. That should be part of your reading material. How slaves built American capitalism. Well, slavery is not a product of Western capitalism. Western capitalism is a product of slavery. 150 years ago, when all this happened, basically. The expansion of slavery, you might say the first 8 decades after American independence, drove the evolution and modernization of the United States. As I look at my facts, the South grew from a narrow coastal strip of worn-out tobacco plantations to continental cotton empire. And the United States grew into a modern industrial and capitalist economy through slavery. But through torture and punishment, slave owners extracted greater efficiencies from slaves, which allowed the United States to seize control of the world market for cotton, the raw material of the Industrial Revolution, and we became a prosperous and powerful nation. But again, through torture and punishment, they beat us brutally, worked us like nobody could work. Because they're not going to do no work. They're going to fold their arms like they do today, like they always have at the cotton mills. My father worked there for 30-some-odd years. He never seen a white man pick up a bale of cotton. They did it. He's had his arms folded and given you orders. He trained, I think he said, 8 foremen. He couldn't be their boss. They could be his boss. Cotton was to the early 19th century what oil is to the 20th century. The commodity that determined the wealth of nations, and cotton was the one here. Cotton accounted for 50% of the U.S. exports. 50% of the economy was cotton. What did it do? The economic boom that America experienced. America owed its very existence as a first world nation to slavery. I'm going to repeat. America owes its very existence as a first world nation to slavery. In the abstract, capitalism and slavery are fundamentally counterposed systems. One is based on free labor, and the other one on forced labor. I'm going to repeat that one. The two systems that exist. One is based on free labor, they're counterposed, and one is based on forced labor. However, the practice and the formulation of capitalism itself would have been impossible without slavery. But you know, slavery, picking cotton, cutting sugar cane in the island fields. Slavery was the central establishment of the industries that today dominate the U.S. economy. Who are they? Real estate, insurance, finance, banking.
Emmanuel, can you talk about what part did Wall Street play in American capitalism and its quest for slavery?
Wall Street was founded on slavery. I'm going to repeat that. Wall Street was founded on slavery. African slaves built the physical wall that gives Wall Street its name, forming the northern boundaries of the Dutch colony designed for, you might say, toward resisting natives who wanted their land back. They took it, basically. The colossal trade in human beings in 1711, the New York officially established a slave market on Wall Street. Africans built, slaves built the Wall Street. Many prominent American banks, including J.P. Morgan, Wachovia Corporation, made fortunes from slavery and accepted slaves as collateral. How many people know that? J.P. Morgan, they recently admitted to that. That it accepted approximately 13,000 slaves as collateral on loans and took possession. That's like basically repossessing your automobile. They didn't pay the debt. They repossessed 1,250 slaves. See, slavery was not a regional altogether. It was a national. In the books today, they portray slavery as a brutal aberration to the American rule of democracy and freedom. But it's unfortunate that we do that. And again, the books say that slavery was not the engine that drove America to prosperity. That's a lie. That's the biggest lie they ever told. I never forget in my history class, I was told that slavery was not profitable. Why you keep it around? Why you keep something around 150 years is not profitable? They just lie, lie, lie. Again, let's put his, let's draw a line between S and S, his story. All you have to do is look at the torrid history and approve, and you might say, appreciate the importance of slavery to American capitalism. The antebellum South. Don't want to get too much into that one. That makes people mad. Makes me mad. In Alabama, there's a dry goods outfit called Lehman Brothers. Warren Buffett is the CEO of Berkshire Hathaway, one of the richest billionaires in America. His antecedent was a Rhode Island textile manufacturer and slavery profiteer. That's how they got started. That's how Warren Buffett got started, was a Rhode Island textile manufacturer and slavery profiteer. That's how he got started. And Rhode Island is not down south. In the north, New England states basically, they were the home of America's cotton textile industry and the hotbed of American abolitionism, which grew rich on the backs of slave people forced to pick cotton down south. The architects, again, of the North or New England Industrial Revolution constantly monitored the price of cotton for their textile mills within the labor of slaves, using the labor of slaves on distant plantations. I want everyone to that's listening to try to purchase this book, the one I read, called How the North Promoted, Prolonged, and Profited from Slavery. The author is Anne Farrow, A-N-E-F-A-R-R-O-W. And what she's going to talk about, how the rich northern classes of people bought molasses, was made with slave labor, and they sold rum as part of the triangle trade. And they lent money to southern planters. Again, we go back to the collateral slave. And of course, they got loans from them also. And most of the cotton that was sold to Britain was shipped through New England ports, northern ports. I want to make one statement here that we need to hear about Abraham Lincoln. Despite being turned into a civil rights hero, let's get the truth out. Abraham Lincoln did not think blacks were equal rights. Lincoln's plan was to send the blacks in America back to Africa. I'm going to repeat that. Lincoln's plan was to send blacks in America back to Africa if he had not been assassinated. Returning blacks to Africa would likely have been his post-war policy. Lincoln even admitted that the Emancipation Proclamation, in his own words, was merely a practical war measure to convince Britain that the North was driven by something more than ambition. But again, for blacks, the end of slavery 150 years ago was just the beginning of the yet-achieved quest for democratic and economic racial equality. And the ending, I'm going to tell you this, the end of in the era before World War II, the American elite consensus viewed capitalism, civilization as a racial and colonial project. To this day, capitalism in America can only be described as racial capitalism, the legacy of slavery marked by simultaneously an emergence of white supremacy and capitalism in modern America. When I finish this, my next topic is going to be titled Racial Capitalism. I'm going to explain exactly what that is.
Hey, Emmanuel, we're going to stop right here for a second. We have a few callers who may have some question or comment as relates to the subject today. We're bringing that caller. We've been waiting for a while. Caller 9289. Welcome to Missing Pages of History. Your question or comment. Caller 9289.
Okay.
Well,
the only question I had was about Warren Buffett. What was his relationship to slavery, being that he was from the North? I hear what you said, but still, how did he get, what was his isolation, being that he was from the North? Because normally we think of Northerners don't necessarily care for slavery. That's at least my understanding that I got from school.
Thank you, Carla. Emmanuel?
Yes.
Your response to the question was?
I think I explained that very eloquently. It was a national thing, not a regional thing. And again, the school books will distort it again, history. They use slaves as collateral to get loans. They sure the cotton came from North. That's where the textile mills were. I explained that very eloquently. That's what happened. History again. Again, slavery was not a regional thing. It was a national thing. Not as much so because this was the agriculture calf belt down south. They didn't like the brutality. They didn't like what they did up north, so they refrained from doing that type of thing. You had more freedom blacks, of course, in the North. That's why we fled North, because of that. Because of the brutality and the torture.
Okay, let's go to caller 3330. See if we can get another call in. Caller 3330. Caller, welcome to Mr. Page of History. Your comment, a question, please. Caller 3330.
I just wanted to make a comment about something I learned during my university study. I was talking with one of my peers, and we were having a discussion about the Constitution, and something, a very interesting point he brought up to me, and I did research, and indeed it is true. I don't remember the exact amendment, but there's an amendment that says enslavement is allowed long as it's a term of punishment, meaning that it does still exist in this day and age, and it's not completely eradicated. So I find that very interesting that loophole exists, and we look at how all of a sudden the prisons have become the new plantations, and you see how much people are making profit off of private prisons. So I see that it's an interesting continuation of this dark legacy.
Thank you for your call, for your comment, caller. Thank you. Can you respond to the statement, Emmanuel?
When I talk about the racial capitalism, I'm going to talk about the slave patrols. I'm going to talk the nation's police historically enforce racial capitalism. And he is right. Historically, it is clear, it's very clear, that racial capitalism, for the sole purpose of oppressing the slave population and protecting the property and interests of white slave owners. And again, prison, especially the private prisons, they're the one now. They're the new plantations now. The thing is to lock you up because it pays to lock you up. To make one statement to the slave patrol, especially the private prisons, if a person is not in that cell, or all the cells, or any cells are empty, the taxpayers pay for that empty cell. So crime pays, especially the private probations and private prisons, yes. And Wall Street has a lot to do with those private prisons. They're investors. I will get to that also. Who are the investors are? Who are the vendors in these private prisons? And why are we in there? Why do we get longer sentences? So he is totally correct.
Emmanuel, we only have a couple of minutes left. I would like to ask you to give me your understanding on this phenomenon. And that's the phenomenon of, in today's world, many Europeans or whites who have benefited from enslavement of African people make the argument that they had nothing to do with it. Those things were done years ago, and therefore they should not have accountable. You just alluded to us this evening that there were many institutions that came about as a result of slavery. How do you speak to that position, that people who are living today should not be held accountable for what took place in the past that has allowed them to be enriched?
Bad opportunity, number one. You still have unjust laws on the books. If you go back to the Supreme Court of 72 that you are not a citizen, that law is still on the book that you are 3/4 of a human being. See, that's why they get in there and move some of these laws. And I say again, we have to expose them. We have to expose the law. They call them blue laws. They meant to call them black laws, but they wanted to use the word black. They call them blue laws. See, America's takeoff in the 19th century wasn't in spite of slavery. It was largely to capitalism. That's the bedrock of how they are today, what's going on today, was created by slavery, and slavery in return created enduring legacy of racial capitalism persists in today, and they make it happen. Like I said before, the only thing that whites have worked very hard at is segregation, Jim Crow, the new Jim Crow, discrimination. That's the hardest work they ever done. They're not going to do no work. They're never going to do no work. 71% of African Americans and Latinos, we do service jobs. We clean up behind them. We drive them around to where it's chauffeur. We're their maids, their butlers. We clean the hotels up. We don't manage them. We just clean them up, basically. Again, 71% of immigrants. They're immigrants, too. They don't think they're not. Again, this is what goes on. But again, the late 19th century irony, of course, it had a statute named the Statue of Liberty. Overseeing the arrival in New York's harbor of millions of foreigners. But again, they treat us as aliens. They come here for a reason, because slavery did. The opportunity, discrimination laws, the segregation laws, this is why they are responsible today, because they want to erase that. Once they erase that ongoing racial capitalism, we have to expose it and completely dismantle it. When we dismantle and eradicate the discontent that minorities have in this country, is rising to a dangerous boiling point. That's what it's doing now. You could always question the racist ideology of whites. We have to do that, because the ideology is racist. It's what it is. So this day, far from being a post-racial nation, American racial equality indicators and race relations is very low. What some of the people called in and said. So again, the old laws on the books, we have to go through it and erase them, eradicate them. Because still, the Dred Scott decision for the Supreme Court is still on the books. Of course, the 14th Amendment made us U.S. citizens, per se, but go back to the Supreme Court 154 years ago, they haven't addressed that ever, will not address it, saying, as a black and as a free person, you will never be a U.S. citizen. Tell them erase that one. They are accountable until all this stuff is erased.
Okay, Emmanuel, we have about 1 minute left. Your final thought on the subject today as it relates to slavery, how it began, and helped build capitalism in America.
Well, like I said before, it's amazing what the caller said about imprisonment. Private prisons were designed for the rich and for the rich. They are for profit only. Their survival depends on imprisoning blacks. That's only they're going to survive. Private prison will not survive unless they imprison blacks. Much the same way the United States was designed. There are more black men in prison or in jail or on probation or on parole that they were enslaved in 1850 before the Civil War. See, that's an amazing stat. How do we actually accept that accommodation and appreciate those numbers? They don't care, because, again, it's all about profit. It's all about capitalism. They did it as slaves. They're going to do the same way with you in the prison system. They're giving you 7.5 years longer for the same crime that a white do. The ones you talk to that's saying they're not responsible, show them where they're responsible. Help erase this. For the same crime, both of us get 7.5 years. Let's do that. Regardless of the lawyer you got, regardless of this or that, let's do that. Let's kill the inequalities.
All right, Emmanuel, we're going to have to stop you there, and we'd like to thank you for sharing your historical knowledge on this subject today, and we'd like to thank our listening audience for their support. I would like to remind everyone that this is a bi-weekly program. You can catch Mr. Page of History every other Saturday at 1 p.m. Our next program will be February the 27th at 1 p.m. Also, just like to remind you that your support is welcome. We have an upcoming raffle drawing, which will take place next Saturday at WCLM 1450 AM radio station at 1 p.m. That will be February the 20th. And we have an ongoing cap T-shirt drive that's going on. If you haven't purchased your T-shirt and cap yet, please do so by contacting a member or going to our website, which is www.mphinc.org. For more information, you're welcome to call us as well at 804-321.